I was thinking about this the other day. Literally, I don't do anything that I don't want to do outside of like Whole Foods, and now that's about to change. Mm. Like everything I do outside of work is exactly what I want to do.
Yeah.
This, writing hockey articles, watching hockey games, drinking, going to the gym. Like, none of that is things that I don't want
to
do.
Yeah. You're not obligated to do any of those.
That's what I hated about school, like, my last quarter. It was just like, I don't want to go read this book right now.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't matter to me. And now we ride.
Guys like him and Bobby Cassidy tend to be, they generally tend to be pretty accurate.
Oh, yeah. It's not a... Well, signings are different. Signings and player movement is different. But with stuff like this, it's very much who's whispering in your ear and who are you pulling on. Because especially in this situation...
Well, it's the same with contracts also.
Yeah, but in this situation, there's like power brokers involved who feel threatened. It's, you know, like, it's the mainstream hockey media, and it's, like, just the old school head, you know, the old talking heads, or mm-hmm. the old, you know, sort of management people in the NHL. Like, they want an angle out of this story. Mm. Like, when he tweeted, they won't stray from the analytic course, but they're looking to improve team defense and get tougher. It's like, so basically what you're saying is analytics are crap. And they're trying to get better. Like there is a
tone. It didn't work, and now we're gonna go back to what was working.
Yeah, there is a tone, and the funny thing is, like, if he's getting one thing, and then another person is saying the complete opposite within the organization. To me, it's just like, who's telling the truth here? You know,
what was the beef with the Giants a couple years ago with Baggerly? What he report?
He reported that Sergio Romo and I think Sean Dunstan had some dust up in the clubhouse.
And the Giants, like all the players, everyone vehemently denied it, but it was still true. They were not denying it because they wanted to keep it in house.
Yeah, I think that's what they were upset about. Because so. I think their position was like, it's not your place to report about things that are happening in the clubhouse. It's your job to report what's going on the field.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's interesting. I didn't know there was a...
a code?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's totally fair to say that, but you have to say it in a way that's like, your job is to report things that are on the record.
Yeah. Yes. That's the reason why I brought it up.
It's like the Thornton thing.
Yeah,
you exactly. know, with Botchford in the Vancouver locker room. Or, Botchford was reporting on that.
Oh yeah.
It was after the Rangers game. It was like at a morning skate or something before the Vancouver game. Thornton says something off the record, and then
it gets reported.
Yeah, like that's different, and I think the journalists should know that. Should know better than that.
And that's sort of the feeling I'm getting from Drager is, you know, he reported something that may be true, is likely true. But Florida didn't, like, it was essentially off the record. And, you know, to, I don't know, save what little face they have on the matter or just denying it, you know. And, you know, they're acting from a position of, you know, we were wronged. And, you know, this is business that was unfairly leaked. Like, well, leaked, essentially leaked, unfairly reported.
Well, what they're saying is it's not true. That's the difference.
What I'm saying is, I tend to, like, just based on past information, tend to take Darren Drager's reporting as reliable, not necessarily fact, but, you know, reliable.
Like, it's, like, and that's when...
So, what I'm saying is that the Florida organization is just trying to save a little face here. Like, it, you know, it to me, it seems like it's probably at least half true, if not all the way true. But because Florida didn't want to get out, they're just trying to... Their only defense against it is to just flat-out deny it.
Well, here's my thing. Just saying that we don't make stuff up, because that's what Bob McKenzie says, doesn't really it only accounts for a very surface level point. Like, is this information true? Like, is this information true, or at least true in the sense of it's not fictitious?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't think anyone's me personally. I don't think anyone should question whether it's true or not, in that it's factual, but they should question where it's coming from, who it's coming from, and for what reason. That's much different, because Dreger's probably getting it from someone who feels a certain way about the situation, because he's literally getting a data point that goes completely against what the Panthers are saying. Like, that's not by accident, you know what I mean?
Mm.
And so, sure, he's not making it up, but it's definitely serving a purpose, you know? I think that's the larger point, is like, why is this information being thrown out there so just in this way?
Just bottom line this for me. Do you think that what was reported by Dreger is false? Like, he reported inaccurate information? Or do you think that, you know, we can take it at whatever, but he shouldn't have reported it?
It's tricky, because I think that ultimately it's his prerogative to report it or not, because the information is information, and in journalism, it's the whole point, is to disseminate information to people so that they can get closer to the truth, right? And I think that maybe there's nothing wrong with divulging that information per se. It's just how thorough was this research? How much digging did he really do? Did he ask everyone in the front office? Like, did he go to the GM? Did he go to different people and not just people that are sort of in his back pocket?
And the problem he has now is,
it's more of an integrity thing, you know?
And, yeah, he, you know, this is going to burn some bridges with some people in, you know,
oh, yeah,
at least Florida office. So, yeah, you know, with journalism, you know, you have to trust the journalist, reporter that you're talking to, you know, for either anonymity or honesty, really, you know, knowing that they're going to write and portray you accurately,
mm-hmm.
Not just, you know, take some things and make up a story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is definitely going to burn some bridges for him, and, you know, he's going to lose some trust. How much, whether it is just contained to some of the Florida front office, all of it,
yeah,
some other people that are on the side of Florida, you know, it's remained to be seen, but, I don't think there will be, but I mean, there could be some sort of fall for him.
Everyone that's in his ear has some stake in this, right? So, like, his sources, you know, biased or not, have some stake in giving him the kind of information that they're giving, and then the Florida Panthers have a stake in it because it's their image. So, mm-hmm. You know, they're going to be putting their own spin on whatever they're telling them, so.
Which, actually, that's a good point. It makes sense, because if you look at everything Florida's done since the new ownership came in, has been very image-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And now something got out that they don't want to get out, and it's affecting, you know, the image that they're trying to build. Because yeah, they're trying to rebuild that whole community down in Florida, like the hockey market of Florida.
Yeah, because it's empty.
Like, yeah. So
the BBT Center is empty.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a school of thought of, you know, there's no such thing as bad publicity.
Mm.
You know, but, like, I don't really see something like this driving up ticket sales.
Yeah.
So I understand them reacting the way they're reacting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just the whole thing just reeks like someone's fibbing, you know, and I think that the Panthers, a lot of it is semantics, because the core of the story is that Dale Tallon has, like, his role has intensified.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the Panthers are trying to frame it as, well, everyone's role has intensified with the GM stepping down to the bench. And to me, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, like, you can't coach and GM. Those are two very big jobs, and it makes sense that you have other managerial people coming in to support general managing duties. To me, that I don't know why that's a story, really. And I think the way Dreger's presenting it is more that, like, now Talon is driving the bus. And I think that that's, I feel like that's where it becomes sort of inaccurate, you know? Mm-hmm. And the way he's presenting it is that Talon has been driving the bus, or has slowly been put into a bigger role. And I don't know. Like, I don't know what's to be gained from that reporting.
Is
like, what are we really learning that we didn't know already, or that's so groundbreaking? And that's why I think the way the Panthers are pushing so hard back, it's kind of like, it's almost weird. I don't really know. I think that with them, the biggest thing is that they want to control the narrative, but it's just not really how this thing works.
And Dale Talon's role has been so confusing because...
Well, that's the other thing, yeah.
Because he was the GM, and then he was promoted to, what was it, vice president of hockey operations?
So he was shunted sideways.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, well, you have an elevated title, but your role is not as important.
Like, he was... Like, that's the thing, is they kind of flaunted the fact that he's in a reduced role, right? And then today, Rowe said to the Panthers beat writer, nothing has changed at all. I know it's out there. It just tells you can believe or not believe what's on Twitter all the time. I spoke to Matt Caldwell, our president and CEO, and nothing has changed whatsoever. When I took over the coaching, Vinny Viola told me to just focus on coaching. There's enough to do there, and I totally agreed with him on that. Dale, Steve Weir, and Eric Joyce meet on a regular basis to talk about the lineup, talk about where we are prospects-wise. Then we meet as a group. There's no secret or more of a collaborative group. Vinny's involved. Doug Sifu is involved. Then Dale, obviously, with his talent of evaluating players. Then I think we have two of the smartest assistant GMs in the business who handle the cap and coming up with scenarios. It's a great team. I know what was reported yesterday. I don't know where it came from. I don't know if Darren had all the facts straight or not. He's a great reporter, but I was a little surprised to see it out there the way it was. Everything is fine. Everything is going to be moving in the right direction. We just got to start winning some hockey games. So that's a lot of mostly BSing and some... There's very little in there that's substantive.
That was very political.
Like that was all fluff, and then denying that they agreed with Darren Dreger's report.
And I think that there is a lot of journalistic honesty there from Harvey Fialkov to put that out, because I think it is worth, when there is such a big story, to give a voice to people who might have a say. I mean, these are big players in the story, so it makes sense. But look, Dreger could be right. You know what I mean? I'm not disputing whether he's right or not. I just think, again, being right in a small in that context doesn't mean that, that he's necessarily revealing the entire story. And I think that's what kind of bugs me about it. Like, someone fed him something, and then he's kind of just running with that, maybe because it fits his own view of the situation, you know? He is a guy who will state his opinion on things, which to me, again, is why I was telling Nick this earlier. I don't really view him as a journalist, and I know that that kind of sounds weird.
He's sort of an advanced, not analyst in the sense of stats, but
he doesn't really do anything.
Like, he's sort of the league wide Pierre Maguire.
In a way, he's
an announcer that covers more of the business and I suppose roster movements of the league, as opposed to on ice action.
I mean, he's super well connected. Like, he knows he knows everyone. But to me, that it's funny, because when you get that well connected, I don't really view it as journalism anymore. It's just you're reporting information, and I know that that's what journalism is, but journalism also requires digging and a lot of legwork, and you're really trying to incorporate multiple sources. I feel like with him, he just sits there and people give him information because they know the level of prominence that he has and his role in the league wide. I mean, Darren Dreger's a powerful man in hockey.
Oh yeah. And I know people give him information, these guys talk about getting texts or whatever from players, coaches, you know, front office guys, you know, just everyone. But, you know, I'm sure...
Agents.
Yeah, agents, yeah, definitely. I'd be very surprised if he doesn't, you know, do digging, do his due diligence. Like, even to hear of a story where he did a little bit of slacking off before this whole story, you know, because we don't know all the details about where the information came from and what the information actually is, because Florida has denied it. But I'd be very surprised if he was lazy on really anything that he reports, that he didn't, you know, fact check it and, you know, make sure that it was accurate at the very least in from the people that, you know, it was going down from.
Yeah, no, so. I agree. I have a hard time imagining that he gets a text from a source saying, this is going on, and then he just says, oh, cool.
And then basically, you know,
tweets it out without...
Yeah, in quotes.
Yeah, without doing any further digging. Yeah,
I mean, I'm sure he does some vetting, but, like, he's definitely not digging as hard because he doesn't have to for these stories. Like, it's just kind of a product of the work he's put in previous years. But the actual tweet, like, the actual thing that people are upset about is when he tweeted yesterday, Dale Tallon is resuming control of management duties and hockey ops in Florida. Panthers need to get back on track and stabilize things. Like, that's a very concrete statement.
No, it is.
Like, he's reporting/claiming that a clear shift has happened.
The only part that's not concrete is it's implying that he's taking up responsibilities that he used to have.
Well, to me, what's the weird thing, and I think where this story kind of takes another wrinkle, is that why would the Florida Panthers pretty much across the board come out and refute that?
Right.
Like, what do they have to gain? And to me, that's why I tend to think that, again, Dreger is pushing a narrative. Like in the tweet, you know, he added they need to settle things down, like they're not gonna stray from the analytic movement, but they need to improve team defense. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's kind of coded language.
Yeah, here's my problem with that whole sentence, because I've been hearing that too about how there's the analytic movement, but.
Yeah.
They need to improve team defense.
I'll pull up the tweet.
Why can't you be committed to doing both? Like, I don't get why you can't improve your team defense and, like, be committed to the analytic puck possession mantra at the same time.
I mean, it's what you've been putting out with your graphs about, you know, for Anaheim, with which defensemen play with whom.
Yeah.
You know, how much better some combinations are than the other.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, you know, you've shown that, you know, both can go hand in hand. Like, you can use analytics to improve specifically in their, what they said they're trying to improve, team defense.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, you would think that if the Ducks coaching staff were to look at, you know, those charts, they would probably think a little bit more or think in a different way about their roster decisions. I think the main goal of analytics is to inform the conversation and to get to a point, like, you know,
it's to get to the truth.
It's to get, like, that's the whole point of statistics, is to get us one step closer to this elusive truth.
The thing that we've seen with, you know, the rise of analytics across sports is it contradict the eye test. You know, like,
yeah.
There are plenty of times, even before analytics, where it's like, you know, they're doing, you know, just with basic stats, doing this, this, and this. They should be doing better, and the way they play, they look like they should be winning, but they're just not, which is not accurately describing anything. You're only saying that they're not winning. Yeah. So, I mean, with analytics, it's sort of become not necessarily checking balances, but, you know, you're checking your work. It's like,
yeah,
it's what we see on the ice
matching what's actually happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's the whole thing, is that and actually, I guess this brings us to an interesting topic, which is what Peter Chiarelli said the other day about Chris Russell and how Chris Russell is one of the very best defensemen in the NHL at breaking the puck out, you know, second only to Nicholas Cronwall, which, like, I hope he understands what that means. But, like, this is a conversation that you can have in anything, is that you can look at the facts and with an open mind, with just the standpoint of I know nothing, and then try to inform yourself from there and you know, kind of spin it forward, or you can work backwards and have already a preconceived notion of what you want to see and then believe whatever confirms that. Like, I mean, Peter Chiarelli isn't pulling up Corsi or anything like that for Chris Russell because, he, of course, it doesn't make him look very good. It makes him look average, but this stuff makes him look good, so I'm going to use that. Like, it's pretty obvious what he's doing there. But anyway, to bring it back to Dreger, just more tweets because I think we need more context here. He said, many reminding Talon, so this is like Twitter speak, so there's some like missing grammar, but I'll do my best. Many reminding that Talon is the president of hockey operations, but anyone in the know understands his role had been diminished in Florida until now. This is factual stuff. Like,
yes.
Like, we know that to be true. He will now actively manage day-to-day operations. I'm filling that in. Which is a great move by the Panthers. So, see, then there's a little commentary there.
That's opinion.
Yeah. That's opinion. Players need the stability and trust Talon. Not saying Talon will disregard analytic move in Florida, but expect moves made to better Team D and make them tougher to play against.
There's that butt again.
Like, that is, I mean, is that even coded language? Like, it's pretty obvious what he's saying.
Yeah,
there.
It's straight up.
Yeah, he's like, just going to disregard it.
Look, and again, analytics, we keep saying this, but it's like, it's just, like, the word analytics is just, you take a big batch of data and then you make something of it. So, like, again, like, what they're doing isn't a, like, it's a referendum, if anything, on their analytics, of the way they're spinning this data.
Their ability to interpret it.
Their ability to interpret it. And so, anyway, all that to say that I just, he made that claim, or he reported that wherever he got it from. And then across the board, their beat writer reported that they're all saying that this isn't true. So, like, what, you know, to me, first off, that's really big news. But second, why would they all deny it?
Yeah.
Like, they just, something there doesn't add up.
I mean, the way it's laid out in my head right now is you have someone that you can generally trust to be accurate with Dreger reporting something.
Yeah.
And then the team that he's reporting on is adamantly denying it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that makes it so you don't know what the truth is, you know, because it's a very black and white scenario. Dreger says something's true. The Florida Panthers, the team he's talking about, says that it's not true. You know, there's not really a gray area there. So, like you said, I mean, the question is, why is Florida denying it? Are they denying it because it's not true? Which, you know, like I said, Dreger is, you know, pretty accurate most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, so, like, people trust him, but at this point, he is becoming a crusader.
Yeah,
in this whole thing, you know.
Yeah, he is definitely fighting for a stance, and if what he reported is true, and Florida is just, you know, lying with their denial, then I understand him fighting for it.
Mm-hmm.
As well, he should fight for it.
It's just that the way I view it. Maybe I'm too much of a purist when it comes to journalism, but I think the journalist's job is only to inform and to. And there are form, you know, there's so many different variations and shades of gray of journalism. But if you're a reporter, if you're just a tried and true journalist, you're only adding information and you're not spinning it. You're not giving anything else but information. And that's why Bob McKenzie actually went after the beat writer for the Panthers. But it's like he literally, if you look at the narrative, the way he wrote his piece, their beat writer and the stuff he was tweeting, it was just pure dissemination of quotes.
Mm.
Like, this is what they're saying.
Yeah.
And to me, that's first off, I like that.
In this whole back and forth narrative, those are the stats. What they said are the facts.
And I think the way McKenzie's viewing it, and like, I haven't read through his whole thing, but it's like, he's again, like, he has an agenda too, because he's maybe trying to stay in good graces with the franchise. But if he is, to me, it's still not a bad thing because of the way he's going about it. He's just pushing this stuff out there. Like, hey, this is what they're saying. Like, informing the story. That's all it is. It's mm-hmm. it's not saying Dreger's full of crap. It's just saying, here's this side of the story. Dreger's saying, here's this side of the story, which, by the way, I'm not going to give you who told me this, and then plus some commentary, plus some pretty strongly held opinions. Like, to me, that's not really journalism. That's like, it's starting from a point of journalism, and then it's obviously reporting, but then it's somewhere along the line, it's just kind of become something else, yeah. You know?
I'm more of a purist about it, too, where it's just the dissemination of facts and information, but it's changed so much these days. Like, look no further than, like, Around the Horn. Like, those people are all considered journalists, and
they're not.
All they do is, you know, spout commentary.
Well, like, journalists, to me, are beat writers. They're the guys who are with the team, you know, the whole season. And, like, yes, they're going to develop their own biases because they're around the team every day. But that's just reporting. Like, you can never really, and that's why I like stats to help inform, you know, reporting, is that you're always going to see stuff through your own lens. But then you need a little bit there to kind of inform it.
Back to your Around the Horn example. Like, how many times do you, you know, obviously it's a score, it's a game, they're scoring. Though that scoring is whatever. But how many times do you see, you know, one of them say, oh, I talked to, you know, blah, blah, and then reality go, oh, actual reporting from, like, Bill Plaschke over there.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, then he'll, like, give him a few points for actually doing his job.
Yeah.
That rarely happens.
Yeah.
It's really tough. It's really tough because, obviously, sports is entertainment. And, like, I think that part of the job of someone who's in the business is to bring that level of entertainment, you know, like, to make it fun. If you're just like a straight up reporter, I think it puts you in a tough spot because I think as someone who watches every single game, you're probably going to feel a certain way, you know? Like, I mean, I remember when I was in the press box at the Ducks games, I would hear some beat writers having conversations about what was happening. Like, they have opinions.
Mm.
They don't directly include it into their reporting
because they're professionals,
but still, like, I mean, the way you see something, regardless of how you report it, is going to affect to some degree how you say it or how you
process it.
Yeah, how you put it out. I just think that no one can really escape their own bias. It's too hard. And it's, in a way, you shouldn't run away from it too much because your bias is what makes you you. It's what makes your opinion or your viewpoint different than another person's. When you let it literally blind yourself to the facts, that's a much different story.
Yeah. Totally.
And so with Dreger, I just feel like he's a little bit more on that side of the ledger. It's just...
Overall or in this case?
In this case.
Okay.
Because I don't want to, like, go back to different examples. And I know that people... There are a lot of people out there who don't trust him. Again, because of, like, his ties around the league and this and that. But I don't want to get into that. I just think in this case, it's not just raw reporting, you know?
Yeah.
It isn't. Like, literally, you just read these tweets, and they're not just straight reporting.
Yeah.
There is spin.
Yeah, there's commentary. It's just weird, like, thinking, because everyone is acting like there's something to be gained on both sides, and it's just like, what is it?
Again, I think that's one thing that we should observe for a second here is, like, at the core of all of this, what is really at play?
Yes.
Like, what is... Like, it's like you said, what is there to be gained from either side? And I think here's my spin. This is pure spin. This isn't reporting.
Spin City. Here it is.
I mean,
spoiler alert.
It's that the Panthers want to save face. They want to make it seem like they're driving the bus. They're driving the narrative. They're not going to be affected by the media because they've already pissed off a lot of people in the media. So this is just kind of a big F you to the media, basically saying you guys don't know what's going on. Even though I think that there are sources within the organization that probably agree with how the mainstream hockey media feels about what's going on there. And they're the ones feeding what's going on to Dreger,
mm-hmm.
you know? So they're trying to save face, or they're at least trying to I mean, like, they're in such a tough spot, and I think that just on a human level, they're sort of lashing out a little bit.
Yeah, and, like, because there's a level of control that's probably desired here, you know?
Oh, yeah, especially, like, I mean, given what all that's happened with Gallant, with the coach firing, so to me it only makes sense that they want to drive that. And then I think with Dreger, he sees himself probably more as a member of that, you know, the old guard of hockey media and just hockey people, because he's more than a media member. Like, he's in tight with these people. And by these people, I mean, like, executives around the league. And I think to him, he probably feels a certain allegiance, and he feels a need. I think he feels a need to check the Panthers. I think he feels like they don't respect what he stands for. And he even said it in these tweets. He was like, it was a bad firing of Gallant.
Yeah.
Like, I think just saying that, it reveals something about yourself.
Because what you would normally, I think what we, like, a different, like, just say any other firing that he reports on is, it's like,
it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. That it's like, you know, so-and-so fired this coach. They felt that it was not, you know, the direction that they were going did not match what, you know, the coach, you know, what the coach was doing. And so they had to part ways, which is all, you know, fact. It's this team, this coach, and then what...
The reason.
The reasons that they both had. And that's not any of his opinion right there. That's typical of what I normally see from firings. You know, saying... That did catch my eye when he said that...
It was a bad firing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's just like, I think he feels personally aggrieved, you know? On some level, or if he doesn't feel personally aggrieved, his friends do, and he's looking out for them, you know, because he knows that he has the chops to you know, drive narrative.
What did Gerard Gallant do for all these people? Like,
all you have to do is be a good hockey man, and this is what happens. Media wars,
man. Too bad. Good hockey man. Like, what's the rubric? Like,
yeah, you know, like that rubric they gave you before an essay in high school. I mean, look, at the end of the day, like, what is happening here?
Like, there's still a lot that's unclear.
There's a lot that's unclear. Like, a lot is going to play out.
Yeah, at the end of the day, what is happening here? It's just people pissed off, people in power pissed off at each other and trying to rope all of us into believing their side of the story.
Yeah, and then the subversive...
On a meta level,
yeah,
that's what's happening.
Yeah, and then, like, below the surface... But still very largely at play is the whole analytics versus, like, sandpaper.
Oh, that's thing. That's the core of this. Yeah. That is the core of this, is that there's new blood in the ranks of in the management ranks, and it's pissing people off and they don't like it and they hear the footsteps.
Yeah, because, you know, what that new blood is saying to the old blood is what you've been doing is wrong and it doesn't work.
Yeah. Or it's not even that. It's that we're better.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the way analytics frames itself. I mean, I spend enough time on hockey Twitter to know that.
There is a certain arrogance when you're accumulating information that you're just naturally going to get. It's like you get all this information and you think you know everything.
Yeah.
Because you have all this information.
Well, and that's the thing. And that's one thing that we should observe also is that analytics people, and this is more of like a larger thing, this isn't about the Panthers situation, analytics people, they're not like innocent in all of this. Like, they're they definitely present themselves as holier than thou and, you know, very very smug and like, I'm just better than you because, like, how dare you think that Willie Mitchell is a good defenseman?
Yeah.
So, like, okay, maybe they're not the most palatable in their approach. But, like, a lot of the times they're right, you know? And I think that when you know you're right about something, it might be hard to back down when someone's telling you that what you're doing, what your methodology is about, isn't right at all. It's incomplete, you know?
It'd be one thing if...
I don't dock them quite as much for that. I don't know.
If you're just being called out on one aspect of something you do, you know, it's easier to stomach because it's just one small thing. But when everything that you are, whether it's, you know, as a person or in business or, you know, whatever, is being blatantly confronted and challenged.
You're talking about the old guard or the analytics?
Both.
Or both, yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. Just, you know, human nature. You don't back down to that, because if what they're saying is true, then everything that you've done and built and that you believe and that you are is wrong, and you have to start over. Essentially, it's saying you're nothing.
Yeah, but like, that's the truth, though, is that at the end of the day, I mean, not to get nihilistic,
but yeah, that's why the conflict is there. It's because no one wants to be nothing.
No, that's the shame about all of this, is that we're all watching the same game. We're all just, at the end of the day, watching it because we enjoy it and it entertains us. But the people who want to get ahead in this business and who want to make money off of it and make it their life, they're going to feel very strongly about their approach. And like, I don't know. I just think with analytics, the way it started is like they're barking up the tree because they know like they're dealing with these powers. But then when someone tells you consistently numbers can't quantify hockey, it's like that stings probably.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, you know what cracks me up? I heard someone make this point the other day, or when I was driving to work today on the PDO cast. It was like, how can hockey not be quantified? We can quantify fucking gravity and, like, you know, I mean, come on. Hockey's not a complicated game or relative to, like, the world, the right. universe.
Yeah.
Like, we figured out quantum physics. You think we can't figure out, like, this shinny, you know?
Well, we probably understand. We probably figured out quantum mechanics.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you get it?
Yes, I get that. But you know what I mean? Like, we're, as human beings, we have reached a point where we understand we're getting to the point where we kind of understand very complex things about the universe. Hockey is not that complex.
And it's like what you've said before about other businesses. They have regular meetings to just go over the numbers. Like the quarterly reports and stuff like that.
Like, how do you think, the biggest driver of, I mean, one of the biggest drivers of, like, capital in the world is, like, loans and real estate. And how do you think they make decisions? Like, do you think they're just looking at a house all day being like, you know, that house competes harder than the other house. I'm going to buy that one.
The sandpaper that house is, like, really good.
They only judge on curb appeal.
It's just like at a certain point, you need more if you're dealing with a complex thing. And you know, hockey is like, I don't want to belittle the game. Like, it's a fast game. It's a very, very fast game.
With a lot of moving pieces.
The puck is bouncing everywhere. You know, you got boards, you got sticks in the lane, you got goalies, you have posts.
Instant replay.
I mean, like, referees. Like, there's so much at play here, and it's not like a sport like basketball where, like, it's pretty obvious what's happening at all times. Like, it's generally easier to explain basketball, in my opinion. But like hockey, it's like, wouldn't it be nice to have something that lets you just kind of slow it down and, like, understand it after the fact? Like, to me, it shouldn't even be a debate, but I don't know, who am I?
and then there's the you know, slowing it down, there's that argument when you're questioning something in replay, whether it's like a goal or more likely a cheap shot, like head contact. That's easy for us to say because we have the benefit of replay and slowing it down and looking at it over and over where the ref sees it once at full speed, live.
And has to make a decision.
And from not even the best angle, most likely.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, even slowing it down, you get a different result than just watching it, not just the ref from the ref's point of view, but just watching it live on TV.
Yeah, I mean, the human eye can only catch so much. Yeah. But, you know, like, the people who have been in the game, who have coached forever, the, you know, scouts, like, they see it differently because that's what they do, is watch hockey for a living.
Right.
So you have to trust them. Like, you have to trust, like, that's the thing, is, like, numbers can only, like, looking at raw numbers or even, like, curated numbers can only help you so much. Like, you have to understand what these numbers are saying. And so, like, just because you know a guy drives a lot of shot attempts when he's on the ice, that only tells you the result. That doesn't tell you, like, the how. It just tells you the what.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, like, sure, like, I don't think anyone out there just looks at an Excel sheet and thinks they know everything about the game, because you don't. Like, you really don't. Like the other day, I was looking at some stats of, like, each Ducks defense pairing, and, like, you know, I was looking at the Holzer Bieksa pairing, and they have a really good scoring chance percentage in there in the ice, and, like, a lot of it is just small sample noise, probably. But it's still just like, whoa, like, that probably merits some investigation, you know? Or why do certain players have better, why are certain players just higher event? Why are some players skew more towards the defensive side? Like, all of that stuff, the numbers, like, if anything, the numbers are more surface level to me. Because watching the game is where you really understand how this is actually happening. So, like, I don't think there's anyone that watches hockey more than the people that are, like, actually invested in, like, these,
like, it's their job,
like, this data collection and stuff. Yeah. So
I mean, yeah, it makes total sense, because the numbers are the what, but the how is what you see. Like,
yeah,
you might say that okay, the numbers indicate that Fowler and Manson, just, I'm pulling names out of my ass.
Go ahead.
But numbers would indicate that maybe Fowler and Manson play horrible together, and they're in the D zone all the time. But then you go, okay, why is that? Like, what is it that they're doing when they're on the ice together?
Or, like, does that mean they're both terrible?
Yeah, or is it just one of them?
Just to quickly step in, they're both actually great together.
They're both great together.
But okay. The thing is, so here's the thing. This is actually, this works anyway. So, like, they're great together, but so are Lindholm and Manson together. So are Manson and, like, whoever together.
Mm.
You pull Fowler away from Manson, and he's not as great anymore. Like, you start noticing patterns.
Mm.
That's analytics. That's looking at the numbers and then drawing a conclusion. That it's just like science, you know, basically. But yeah, like, I mean, even Patrick Laine, for example, is a guy who all of a sudden is being a little scrutinized by the analytics people, because it's like, wait, hold on a second. He's a great goal scorer, but why do his possession stats suck? You know, or he's scoring on a high percentage of his shots. Like, this is kind of weird. This is usually the stuff where we would say, if it's any other player, it's like, oh, well, he's going to regress, or he's just getting lucky. But you watch Patrick Laine, and he's blasting these pucks home against very good NHL goaltenders.
Man, he puts one puck in his own net, and people start to question him. Man, what a rough existence it is in the NHL.
But, like, so that's where it's cool, because it's like, well, you see these numbers, right? And you're kind of thinking to yourself, this might be a flawed player. But then there's more to it. He's 18. He's coming from a different league, like a different continent.
Different ice surface.
The way he's scoring might be the hardest way to score for any player. Like, being able to hit, being able to hit the net from that angle consistently with the power, with the accuracy to beat a goaltender who's in the NHL, even if it's like a second string guy, that's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to do in beer league, you know, to get that shot off.
It's so harder to do in beer league.
Yeah, because you're not going to get that pass. But yeah, so all that to say that, like, you weigh that against the numbers you're seeing, and it's like, well, okay, maybe he's deficient in some areas, but this is a very important skill, and you just bank on the fact that maybe these other areas are going to grow. Like, you're not so much worried about his Corsi if he's scoring every game, right, in a way that's sustainable. Because you just, at the end of the day, that goal is more important.
Yeah.
If he's maybe a little below even or whatever.
It's what you see with active defensemen like Burns or Subban or Carlson. Yeah. They're not going to be, you know, that Nick Lidstrom stay at home shut down defenseman.
Yeah.
You know, Lidstrom was more than just stay at home.
Because
they take chances, they take risks, these risks aren't always going to pay off for them.
Yeah.
But in the end, you're better off for them playing the way they're playing and getting those points, and maybe occasionally getting, you know, the puck comes back your way and in your own net. But you know that having them on your team is still going to make up for the fact that, you know, that, okay, yeah, they took a chance, it didn't work out, puck went in our net, but they can still go out there and get it right back.
Exactly. Like, you bank on the upside.
Yeah.
As opposed to fearing a turnover.
I mean, it's been Dallas's strategy for the past 2 years. Yeah. We don't care how many goals you score against us. We're just going to outscore you.
Yeah, and we're starting to see the limitations of that. But, like, it's actually a good point because, like, the other day, Eric Engels of Sportsnet asked Max Pacioretty about, you know, the influence that Alex Radulov has had on the Canadiens. And he gave a really interesting quote. And, I mean, I'll just give you the gist of it because it's pretty long. But basically he said is, like, the way Radulov plays the game is very fearless in that he doesn't fear making mistakes. If he tries to make a play and messes up, it's not going to prevent him from going right back out there and trying it again or trying something just as daring. Right. And what Pacioretty was saying is that, well, in North America, that's kind of coached out of us. That if we make a turnover, we're not going to try that play again because we fear, you know, either getting benched or the consequences of it. Like, it's just... what he was saying or adding to that is that Radulov has sort of given him back a bit of that fearlessness, a bit of that just creative drive to just, you know what, like, I'm here to make plays. I'm not here to chip it in every time out of fear of turning it over. And, like, that's important. Of course, that's not a perfect strategy because if you're going to make mistakes, it's going to cost you. But I think it's important to encourage that. Yeah. And it's not like Alex Radulov is out there trying to toe drag at center ice when there's no one behind him. It's not that.
Yeah, he's not doing like a triple lux through the neutral zone.
Like these are NHL standards we're talking about.
And that's the thing, at all levels, you see players that try, you know, they try new things, they try to be creative, and there are some players that it works out for, and there are some that it doesn't. And the difference is picking your battles.
Yeah.
You weigh the risks versus the reward of doing something specific. And if it's I'm the last man back, I'm going to try and do this spinorama, this last ditch spinorama to, you know, create a little bit of open ice to get off a fancy pass.
Yeah,
and that's not the best idea. Maybe I'll just, you know, get in deep.
Yeah, like there's a time and a place.
Yeah, you know, if you're in, you know, the other team's zone with puck deep and you want to try something creative, that, you know, maybe 50-50, you know, but you have confidence in yourself, which you have to have, then, you know, you go ahead and try it. It's the players that get it coached out of them are ones that tend to do it too often.
Their confidence gets shaken, you know.
Yeah.
Or they're not able to understand the difference between being told, hey, don't do that, as opposed to being told, don't do anything, you know. And like... I think that's a testament to the guys like Subban or Carlson or Burns or even Radulov who make it to this level, because hockey's a game of conformity, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a team game. It's a game of do your part, but ultimately, like, it's always under the umbrella of the team. So to make it to this level with that sort of culture, but playing that kind of game, it means they're just on another level. Like they're playing their own game, you know.
I mean, you know, ever since hockey became basically, you know, the Soviet team, you know, it's a ballet.
Yeah.
You know, everyone needs to be in a certain place at a certain time because that's where the puck's going to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, that requires everyone to be on the same page and, like you said, conformity.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe back in the day when, you know, things weren't as structured, you know, you can be a little more creative and open up ice for yourself and then, you know, subsequently for everyone else around you. Now like you said, it's more about being in a structure, playing together, playing a certain way, and, you know, finding the right players that fit that style.
Well, that's the thing even the analytics teams are like this in that they have a system and they want to promote it. And, like, what's tricky with that, but I think what's good about that, although it does seem like they are forcing them into a certain umbrella, they might be pigeonholing them. It's like that kind of game is promoting offense and creativity. I don't think we're ever going to see teams again like the 80s Oilers or the 70s Canadians or the 40s Canadians, 50s Canadians. Anyway, that just get out there, that just lace them up and play.
Yeah.
Like, that's over. And, like, that's fine. I actually kind of have a hard time watching old school hockey games.
Oh, yeah.
Because it doesn't look like anything.
Even games from, like, the last year before the lockout, you know, 03-04.
Yeah.
Even back then, it's like there's still a lot of players that, well, not a lot, but there's still plenty of players that from that era that are still in the league now that you watch, and then you watch you know, their teams back then, and it's like, this is, it's kind of boring. Like, it's not really hockey. It's just a log jam of,
yeah,
it's not fun.
Like, or conversely, if in the 80s, it's like, well, like, what is even happening here?
Yeah.
Like
elbows.
Like,
that's what's happening.
Like, what do you, like, how do you not score here?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause the goaltending was like, It
looked pretty bad.
I don't want to diminish the accomplishments of some of the greats, but it was primitive.
It was primitive, but like even then, it's like those were the best of their time.
Yeah.
They look bad now because goalies are robots now. Well, I shouldn't say robots. They're well-trained athletes.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I mean, like the game has changed, and it's you want to balance the creativity with, you know, the conformity. I don't think those things are like mutually exclusive. I think that like it's good to be creative. It's good to want to make plays out there. But at the same time, like, I think, you know, be smart.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there are times where it's okay to just dump it in.
It's like what Todd McClellan used to say to Brent Burns. Sometimes you have to punt.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes there's not like if you're like the quarterback rolling out one way and then throwing all the way back across the field, like, that's low percentage. You don't have to do that. Like, just punt and we'll work hard to try and get it back.
Yeah, but
So there is a time and place to be creative and to not be creative. But like the robot aspect of it where you're just saying like dump it in every time or don't take any chances or whatever. Like, that's such a waste of the time that they put in working on skills.
It's such a waste of a draft pick, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, like, it's just such a weird conflict. Like, I think in an ideal world for me, like, you have a strategy as a team. Like, this is how we think we can win. But I think that strategy should come from the players you have. Like, mm-hmm. This is who we have. But then, you know, it's a weird cycle because it's like, it's kind of a chicken or the egg situation. Like, you draft and sign players with a vision of how you want to play, but then if those players turn out to not be what you thought they were going to be, then you kind of have to work in reverse.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, I think it's tricky. But at the end of, yeah, like, so at the end of the day, you don't want to force a guy to play a certain way that he's just not going to be good at. You know, like, I mean, it's like when they put Nick Ritchie on the Ducks in the first line, I don't think that he wasn't capable of playing on that line. I just don't think that's his role. I don't think you put that kind of player along scorers and playmakers. He's a guy, like, now he's playing on the third line with Vermette and Kasha, and I think that's perfect for him because he does have some offensive gifts. He does win a lot of board battles, and he can, because of his big frame, he protects the puck very, very well. Like, those are nice things, but not necessarily, like, first line.
Yeah.
Like when he's out there on the first line, I don't think the other team's scared of getting scored on, you know?
Mm.
But in a third line support role, that makes perfect sense, you know, which unfortunately for the Ducks, like, they drafted him, what, like 10th overall,
yeah,
in exchange for Bobby Ryan. Like, they drafted I hate to say third liner in a disparaging way, but like a good role player,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, Bobby Ryan, I love the way Bobby Ryan plays,
yeah,
but he only has 4 goals this year, so.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, if I knew all the facts now, and I mean, like, no one has that luxury, but like, if I were to, right now, if I were to choose between even the Bobby Ryan we're seeing, Bobby Ryan or Jakob Silfverberg, Nick Ritchie, and Stefan Nason, I think I'd still take Bobby Ryan.
I would too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For sure.
And I mean, like, I don't even think those guys are bad players. It's just, I think Bobby Ryans are harder to find.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's actually funny because I remember seeing someone say this, might have been 2 years ago. But, like, don't overrate Corsi. Corsi is something you can get for cheap. People just don't know that. Goals are much harder to find. That's what you should be paying for.
Mm.
And that's, like, so, like, Silfverberg's a nice player. He's scoring a bit this season. I think a lot of that's, you know, a bit just more luck-driven, the fact that he's playing more. Richie's a nice player. Like, they're all good possession players. But, like, you don't have to shell out money for that because you can get that elsewhere with cheaper guys. But a guy like Bobby Ryan, who can flip a game on its head, score a nice goal, like, that's what you shell out the money for.
Yeah,
you know, because it's just more rare. It's just like it's just asset management. That's all it is.
it's sort of like if you know, after Jonathan Cheechu scored 56 goals, you know, it's
God, like that happened.
You look at him, it's like, wow, he scored 56 goals. I'm going to pay him a lot of money to keep scoring 56 goals.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at why he scored 56 goals.
Yeah.
It's because, you know, the acquisition of Joe Thornton.
He scored 56.
Yeah. Yeah. Two more than Jaromir Jagr.
Like, I mean,
Jagr was so upset about it that he bolted for the KHL. Yeah. Unbelievable.
That was such an insane year.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, you have to look at the why. It's like, you look at a player, like, it strikes me funny that this player scored 56 goals. Maybe I should look at how he scored those goals. And yeah, if it's, you know, something he's doing, something that he can repeat, then, you know, he's worth the money because there's a good chance he's going to score a lot of goals in the future.
Yeah.
But if it's all because of someone else or yeah, circumstantial, like he was just in the right place at the right time, Tanner yeah, Pearson.
I mean, getting Joe Thornton, getting Joe Thornton on your line in his prime is
right place, right time.
I mean, yeah,
figuratively.
I guess. I mean, I don't totally want to get into this debate, but let's do it anyway. So, like,
let's do it.
At work today, I was talking with a coworker just about like the Sharks and stuff, and he was like, "Oh yeah, Patrick Marleau is easily the Sharks' greatest player of all time," and his stance was mainly because Marleau is a lifer. Whereas, I mean, like, I'm just going to say it, like, Thornton, I think, is clearly the better player, but he played, I mean, now it's becoming not the majority of his career in Boston.
Yeah, he's played more games in teal than in yellow. I'll sort of amend what he's saying, because my opinion is very similar, but just not, like, I don't agree with his final outcome. Patrick Marleau is the... He's sort of the face of the franchise because he's been the most consistent. He's been there the longest, and he's been there his whole career. Joe Thornton is the greatest Shark of all time because the Sharks were never great until they got Joe Thornton, and it's directly because they got him.
See, like, that's so tricky. Because, like, I guess it's kind of like the situation where, like, Rocket Richard is the greatest, air quotes, mm-hmm, Montreal Canadian of all time because of the role he played, of like just the sort of myth around him, not myth, but like just
50 and 50
something about, yeah, like just stuff like that, you know, like there's something about him that you just associate with the franchise. But the, I think the Habs leading scorer of all time is Guy Lafleur, but no one really thinks of him as the guy in franchise history. You know, you could even say the same about Jean Beliveau. Like, I still think that even though Jean Beliveau was, he might be the leading point scorer. I don't know. It's one of the two, but even as great as he was, I still think people think of Rocket Richard before they think of Beliveau. I think it's kind of the same thing here. It's like, I think Marleau, in people's eyes, and I kind of agree with this, is the greatest Shark, again, air quotes, in that, like, he's the guy who was always there through thick and thin and was productive and just a fan. Like, he's Patty, you know? Mm-hmm. But Thornton is the best player. Like, he's the best player they've had.
He's Jumbo.
Yeah, like I've had this conversation with people before, is that, like, to me in sports, greatness is this like other thing that, like, we don't fully understand, but we attribute to guys who, if you take it at face value, aren't the greatest.
So I was being a little facetious when I said he's Jumbo, but it was off of a thought that I was having while you were talking about Richard.
He's the Rocket.
Yeah, he's the Rocket. He earned himself a nickname. We may not fully understand why he got that nickname. Obviously, you know, putting the puck in the net and Stanley Cups, but there's still something about someone. Like, Patrick Marleau is very good. He's going to get 500 goals this year.
Yeah, which is nuts. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, he himself is very, very good, but he's still just Patty. You know, which is, you know,
he's not Jumbo.
It's not really a nickname. You know, like, you know, some people get nicknames for certain reasons.
But people only call him Patty.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they either say Patty or botch his last name. Yeah. Like, it's one of the two.
Yeah. Marleau.
Yeah.
No.
Marleau.
It's not that.
It sounds like Merlot, like the wine.
It does.
Yeah. I mean,
and you look at it too. Joe Thornton has punched his ticket to the Hall of Fame. Like, that's no longer a question.
Yeah.
Patrick Marleau's Hall of Fame credentials are still
debated. He's a Stanley Cup short.
I think with Marleau...
take a drink.
I think with him, like, again, it's like sports is so funny. It's like there's nothing really great about Patrick Marleau. Like, quiet guy, never really said anything memorable. Like, what's the most memorable Patrick Marleau quote? Great game, we don't know. You know, like, there isn't, you can't think of it, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, he's had really great moments. He's associated with the franchise that drafted him. He's been through everything with his team. And, like, those guys get rewarded in the end, you know? It's kind of like Iserman. Where, like, I think Iserman might not have always been the best player on his team. Same thing with Taves. Like, it's these kind of leaders that maybe they're not necessarily the greatest, but they end up being remembered as such, you know?
It's sort of...
I mean, Iserman's really good, by the way. I don't think Iserman's bad. I'm just kind of...
it's interesting. We're trying to quantify things that is just human nature, which in itself is not really quantifiable. The way we look at players, like if analogously, another Bay Area sports player, Buster Posey, demeanor very similar to Patrick Marleau.
Yeah,
but you know, if you look at just you're naming all Posey's accolades. You know, 3 World Series, Silver Slugger, Gold Glove, All Star. You know, it goes on and on. And you know, he sort of put up a Hall of Fame resume in the very first third of his career.
Yeah, by the age of 30.
Yeah, first half of his career now, I suppose. And you know, Patrick Marleau, like he and Patrick Marleau, both quiet, sort of unassuming. You don't really think of them for anything being outspoken, anything scandalous. You know, it's just they're just sort of consistently there.
They were there, and
themselves. Like, yeah, and, you know, one is on track for a Hall of Fame, Buster Posey. And many consider the great catcher and the best catcher in the league right now. And the other, Patrick Marleau, who is putting up very close to Hall of Fame numbers.
Yeah. And I mean, 500 goals.
Yeah, you know, he's doing all the same things in very similar fashion. No championships. And you look at it, and it's like, and people look at championships, but they don't really care about numbers.
And he's never won an award, right?
Yeah.
Like no. He's never won an individual award.
He was nominated for the Lady Bing once or twice.
Yeah.
That's it.
Because
it was worth noting.
Because he's not someone who is, I hate to bring him up, but he's not like Jeremy Roenick, who's just, you always know when Jeremy's in the room.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's always, look at me, I'm here, it's a party. You know,
Jeremy Roenick has... shouldn't be a
so there's some players anyway. That are just, you know, there because their personality is omnipresent and you're always thinking about them, and then they have the numbers to back it up. Someone like Patrick Marleau, the numbers are there, but he's just not in the forefront of your mind. And
yeah, I wonder how many 500 goal scorers aren't in the Hall of Fame.
Not that many.
I would assume not that many. Yeah. But who knows. I mean, it's kind of like, it's the same thing in every sport, like basketball, for example. Like Kobe Bryant, people think of him as the greatest Laker ever. Whereas, or even some people will even go as far as to say he's one of the greatest basketball players ever. Whereas, like, every stat you hear runs contrary. Like, just inefficient score, not actually that good in the clutch, was arguably never, I mean, like, you could even argue, at least in the early years, definitely not the best player on the championship team. He was kind of second fiddle to Shaq. Always needed a strong support, you know what I mean? Like, but that narrative they're never reflected in the narrative. And like, he's going to get a statue in front of the Staples Center and everything. It's like you were saying, cause he was there in those moments, and like, that's fine. You know, like, sports doesn't always have to be rational, by the way.
that much is certain.
I
think that's a very, good point. Is a lot of players create their own narratives by, you know, creating their own brand. Like,
oh yeah,
you
know, well, Kobe did that for sure.
You see this in basketball,
the Black Mamba,
in football,
Mamba face.
You see players, you know, you are your brand. Like Richard Sherman, you know, he says like a couple, like two controversial things
about Thursday Night Football.
Yeah, back when his career started, like when his fame started, and because of those things, even though people were like, this guy's an ass, everyone was paying attention, and he was good, and now everyone was paying attention to him being good, and he blew up after that.
Yeah, but that's a recent phenomenon, the personal brand. That's.
But I think it helps.
That's like, newer.
When we're talking about.
Oh yeah, it helps, know, of course.
Legacy and, you know, just how people view your career at the end. You know, being loud and outspoken, not necessarily, you know, controversial, but, you know, just, you know, making sure the eyes are on you, and then delivering when you need to deliver. People are going to remember you as great.
Yeah. So all that to say that, like, yeah, like, Marlo, not a personal brand guy, but was just always there. And, like, I don't know. I don't think he's going to the Hall of Fame.
I just would be surprised.
I just don't think so. Again, there's just nothing about him that's, like, besides his totals, which, again, are impressive, but not eye-popping. Like, he played, like, 20 years, whatever, and he put up 500 goals. Like, that's not that uncommon. You know, if you're a decently productive guy who doesn't fall off a cliff early in his career, you know, in terms of production.
I think if...
Like, I don't want to diminish it, but, like, that's just... There are a lot of 500-goal scorers.
I think if he never wins a Stanley Cup, or even if he wins a Stanley Cup with someone else, he might not... I'd be surprised if he made it to the Hall of Fame, even if he finishes with Hall of Fame numbers.
Yeah. I mean, because he's going to crack 500 in his maybe second-to-last season.
This year.
You know? Yeah, and, like yeah. It's just...
If he stops having goals disallowed, yeah, he'll right. do it this season.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think Joe Thornton is a lock for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And he's never won a cup. But yeah. That's just because he's that good.
Yeah. He's gotten to the point with his production where he doesn't need to win a cup to make the Hall of Fame.
I mean, it's like Sidney Crosby could retire today and be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could even argue maybe Jonathan Toews could retire today and be a Hall of Famer. Judge, like, just going off of what they value, like yeah. accolades and stuff. I mean, man, just quick, like, Sidney Crosby, like, might get 50 and 50.
Yeah.
I mean,
after missing, how many games did he miss? Like, six?
It was four or six.
I think it was, like, four.
Four.
And he's Brady-ing.
And he's got, what, like, 22 goals?
Yeah, something like that.
Like to put this in perspective, Phil Kessel has 10.
Yeah. Well, they're all playing well. Like,
they are.
Like, yeah. Malkin might put up a 90-point season and, like, no one will notice.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. Like, he's on pace. Yeah. I mean, and it's funny because I saw this chart of Crosby's goals, and they're all within, like, 5 feet of the net. He's already scored two this season where he's batted a puck out of the air,
yeah.
off the goalie's back, and into the net. Like, I don't want to say that's lucky because I know he's that good, but, like, that's only going to happen a few times a season.
It's preparing and taking advantage of opportunities when they present themselves.
Yeah.
So, like, he worked for those goals and then was just fortunate enough that either through action, like prior actions that he took, or just, you know, things that happened on the ice that they presented themselves to him.
I mean, a lot of people are crying for regression because, again, they think, like, oh, he's shooting, like, 27% right now or something. Really? Like something unreal.
That's stupid.
It's above 20%. That will come down. But like when it's Sidney Crosby, you don't really question it. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, yeah, he'll probably do for some cooling off, but we don't even really know how good of a goal scorer he can be in the NHL because I think he hasn't really cared about scoring goals the past few years. You know, he's a playmaker. And I think that if he put his mind to scoring 50 every season, like, I think he would.
It would be interesting to see what would happen if he, no, like, I'm saying this for lack of a better way of saying it, no disrespect to Alex Ovechkin, but what would happen if he just unleashed his inner Alex Ovechkin?
Yeah, if his sole purpose was to score.
Yeah.
Like, he would get 50.
Yeah, it would just be, it'd just be interesting to see how he would do it, though. Like, would it still be around the net, or would he just be, like, dangling through?
I don't know.
Like, it'd be interesting to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's shooting at 26.9% right now.
Yeah.
When his career is usually above 14%, yeah. Which is still really good.
It's still really good, but, like, he's doubling it right now.
Yeah.
Not something you see. Yeah, I mean, I'm rooting for him. Sidney Crosby's been one of my favorite players for a long time, so yeah. I'm happy when he does well. I think the league's a better place when he's dominating. I kind of love that this is happening in the season where everyone was prepared to just like coronate Connor McDavid.
Yeah,
I kind of love that.
Yeah,
I know that he's not on Twitter, or at least doesn't have a public Twitter. I know that he's not really out there and says he doesn't listen to stuff, but you know, he was hearing the Connor McDavid is the best player stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that he's like, okay, fuck you.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. And like, I mean,
you don't get to be the best by stipulating.
Yeah. Like he's on another level.
Is McDavid still leading the league in points?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the funny thing is like Crosby's hitting that Cy Young level where he's got more goals than assists, which is weird.
By a lot.
Weird for him.
Yeah. He's got almost double.
Yeah. But like, yeah, I mean, to me right now, I still think McDavid is the MVP.
Yeah, he's 6 points ahead of Crosby, who's in third.
Yeah,
because McDavid's team isn't good. I don't think the Oilers are good.
Yeah, no.
They got off to a really good start, and they've shown flashes of what they could be in the future.
They've like, look, but let's stop crowning this team for not being crappy anymore. Like if we really want to be real about the Oilers, let's talk about them from the lens of like normal NHL team expectations, not like lottery team expectations.
Right.
Like there's just too much evidence right now that they're only good because of McDavid. Like outside of that line, they're getting destroyed. When he's out there, they're like dominant.
Mm.
I don't think that's an accident.
Is he playing with Draisaitl?
It seems like it's a revolving door.
Because he's having a good season too.
Yeah. I mean, he's a good player.
He is. Can you believe that the Columbus Blue Jackets, if they were in the Pacific, would be leading the Pacific?
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah, 40 points.
They're good, but more on the Blue Jackets in the next episode. Yes. We have a guest coming on, so won't name it right now, but we have a guest coming on who knows quite a bit about the Blue Jackets.
Yes.
So
very excited.
Stay tuned for that because I'm pumped to talk Blue Jackets because I honestly have no idea what's going on there. And I thought that maybe we might talk Blue Jackets today, but I was like, you know what? Like, I don't know enough.
Yeah.
I needed, like, the journalist in me was like, let's get a source in here.
Yeah.
With the Blue Jackets, like, for the, like, outside of the first week, like, ever since the first week when they didn't regress back to being crappy, the only thing in my mind is, like, what is going on in Columbus?
Well,
and,
yeah.
You know, like, I don't know because it's not on national television. And the only times I've seen them, they've already played the Sharks the two times they're going to play them this year, and they lost both times to the Sharks. So, yeah. Like, that's not really, it might not be indicative of what they're doing to other teams.
I just think that they're weird. Like, it started off as a hot streak with a good power play, and now it's become like they're actually out shooting teams.
And they still have the best power play in the league.
Their success is out of control.
Their success is weird, and that's why
we need answers.
On Saturday, we'll be getting some answers, although that podcast will probably be out Monday.
Probably.
Yeah. But yeah, all that to say that, anyway, back to the Oilers thing, though. I want to, at some point, if this continues where the only good line on the Oilers is McDavid and
the two people you put with him.
Yeah, McDavid and two pylons, basically.
McDavid and friends.
Yeah, McDavid. I mean, like, look, they have some good players, but like,
yeah.
And then, like, you know, maybe their defense is okay to average. Like, is it time to start asking questions about Todd McClellan? Because I thought that when he was going to get there, they were going to become legit.
Is it the
personnel, or is it a bit of both? I think it's a bit of both.
I don't think it's time to ask the coaching question yet. Because
I don't mean, like, is it time to get rid of him?
No.
I just think, like, I think it's time to at least scrutinize him a little bit more, you know?
I mean, you know, maybe, but like outside of McDavid, you know, like even last year there was still like a little bit of an upward swing from previous years. So
yeah,
I'm giving it one more year with what they have.
Yeah, I mean they are getting marginally better.
Yeah,
and so like, and I think he's trying his hardest. It's just the thing. It's just weird because, like, again, if this continues and this trickles over maybe into another season, I mean, it's going to make me start wondering, you know, with the Sharks, for example. Like, I know they were very good. How much of that was him? How much of that was the roster? You know? And, you know, you see, like, I mean, I hate to be this guy right now, but, like, DeBoer gets there in the first year they go to the Cup Final, you know? Like, was McClellan holding the back? Personally, I don't think so.
Mm.
But why not ask the question?
Yeah.
You know? Because look what's happening in Edmonton. And I don't think, again, I think the situation is so wholly apart from where he was at in San Jose, where he had a very, you know, just an established veteran lineup. Like, he never had to deal with young guys in San Jose, right?
Not
Not really. Like, it was guys in their primes, like, maybe not veterans yet, but, like, 25, 26, 27.
Yeah, when he got, when Couture came up, Couture made his mark on the team almost instantly. You know, then you get Brent Burns in the trade, and Brent Burns was already Brent Burns.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of other players, started out, like, they, like everyone gets called up, they get shoved into the third or fourth line, and then a couple might, break through and, show that they can handle more minutes and a bigger role on the team. But, most of the time, players just shoved into the third line and then up and down between the minors, which is really typical for most teams.
Yeah. I just can't help but think that maybe Todd McClellan is more of a guy. He's like a closer, or he's a guy that it's maybe like a Hitchcock where you bring him in to a team that's fleshed out, a veteran team. And then he can bring them to the playoffs and like do well. Maybe they need like a Mike Sullivan type, like a guy who's like more development oriented. Cause like, it's like we're saying, I don't think McClellan really had to develop in San Jose.
No, not at all.
It actually kind of, it's actually kind of funny cause I never thought about this, but like, what was the rationale behind hiring him for the Oilers, especially when you consider the young player aspect?
The amount of wins he had.
Oh yeah. Like, and I know that's all they probably looked at. But like, that's kind of a lazy way to look at it ultimately.
Oh no, yeah. No, like,
isn't he known kind of for being good with young players, which is weird for a guy coming from Detroit and San Jose.
But the one thing I'm going to remember with him is from his first year with the Oilers, like McDavid was struggling. He had like 1 point in his first like 7-10 games, something like that.
Yeah.
And McClellan pulls him aside and just says basically be yourself. It was a little more situational in that with what was going on, but like the very next game McDavid exploded and then he's suddenly putting up numbers left and right, and if he doesn't get injured he's going to win the Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
And
but I mean, how hard is it to coach Connor McDavid?
Probably not, but he still had to do it. And
yeah,
he got Connor McDavid out of Connor McDavid. So
look, we've been saying this, the Oilers are third I think right now in the Pacific, but are very, very close to first and have been the whole year.
Yeah.
With an incomplete team.
Yeah.
That says a lot about Todd McClellan, I think.
Yeah. I mean, but no, that's the thing. It's that everything says that they're not good outside of McDavid. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And I know, like, it's impossible for one player to do every single thing, but they're as close to that as you can get.
Mm.
And, like, it just makes me think, they have a better roster than they've had.
Right.
I would just expect them to already be, if the coaching was really getting through, and that's another thing that we can discuss, like it's, how much of this is on the players versus the coaching. Do they need, cause I see Todd McClellan as more of a disciplinarian than a guy who's going to, let you cry on his shoulders.
He's
at least you can't deny that's his persona.
No,
outwardly
he's
fine with calling people out in the media.
His persona is very much,
he's a hard ass,
someone not to be messed with.
Yeah,
but he's disciplinarian is not the right word.
Yeah. To be fair, that's kind of like every coach.
The one thing I like about McClellan is he's not a cliche machine, like you said. He speaks his mind.
His interviews are like must listen.
Yeah, like if you want to hear what's actually going on in a game or with a team, he's going to tell you what's going on, and it's not going to be like a John Tortorella rant fest. You're going to get useful information.
I mean, I just don't want to sound like I'm questioning him because of like just the classic, like sports talk radio. Like, is it time to start questioning Tom? It's not that. It's just like, you look at the way they're playing, and I'm not even look, because like their results are fine if you think about it, but the way they're playing, it's sort of like it just makes you wonder how good of a job is he doing. So I would, like, if I were to give him a letter grade right now, I'd probably give him like a B minus, you know. I think he has made them better to a small degree, but they can still be a lot better, you know.
Yeah, that's fair.
I just, like, I look at the work that that Bill Peters is doing in Carolina. They play good hockey with very little talent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, now they have more now they have more talent than they did, but, like, systemically they've always been like an A plus, you know. And he's, and so, like, I look at that and I just wonder, why can't McClellan do that with this team? And, well, he's not Bill Peters, so obviously it's not going to be the same. It's not the same approach. It might just take longer. But, like, it, again, it goes back to this whole thing of, like, was he the right guy for the job? You know, I think, again, like, coaches are the same as players. You want to put them in the right situation to succeed. Yep. Not every coach can take a certain type of team and take them to the promised land. You know, like, I mean, Mike Babcock in Toronto, like, no one knows that that's going to work out.
Yeah.
We assume Mike Babcock is this great coach because of bringing, you know, Henrik Zetterberg, Pavel Datsyuk, Nick Lidstrom.
Stepping into Scotty Bowman's shoes.
Yeah, like, I mean, we give him a lot of credit, and obviously there's no way to really judge him yet. We're judging him on a curve in Toronto.
I mean, he did take Anaheim to the cup final.
He did. Yeah, I mean, there was, but again, like, they had good players on that team too, you know? I think that job would probably be more indicative of the coach he is than, like, you know. And I mean, but those Detroit teams were so dominant, though.
Yeah.
That I think there is added value there. You know, you don't get to like a 60% Corsi without a little boost.
Yeah.
Like, that's unfathomable nowadays.
Yeah.
And those 07, 08, 08, 09 Red Wings teams were like that good. And I know that they had good players and all, but like still. But even then, you know, it's like, is he the guy? Is he the kind of guy you want developing a young team? Like, I don't know. I mean, did you guys see the comments from Frank Corrado today?
That, yeah, I did. Like, yeah,
he,
I did not.
He basically,
when the coach doesn't like you, you don't play, and that's where I'm at right now.
He's been scratched for all but three games this season, or if that, and like they re-signed him over the summer, and meanwhile Matt Hunwick and Roman Polak are playing every game. You know, it's just.
The quote about what do you consider to be a good game for Roman Polak and Matt Hunwick?
Yeah.
That was so weird.
Yeah. So it just, like, I don't think any coach is really ever.
Wait, did Babcock say that?
No. Like, someone asked Mike Babcock, what is a good game for Roman
Polak? I'll pull it up, yeah, since. All right. So this is what he said. So Chris Johnson, reporter for Sportsnet, tweeted, I asked Mike Babcock what constitutes a good game for the Hunwick/Polak pairing. Here's what he said. So this is Mike Babcock talking now. There's a bunch of ways to look at the game. So Corsi's won, maybe. But who turns the video on and rewinds to see if those shots actually hit the net or not? That's such a,
like, I mean, you should. You're the coach.
Well, that's just such a, like, basic layer of argument against Corsi that's been largely disproven. But anyway. I mean, Patrick Waugh basically said the same thing last year. You could shoot from anywhere. You could shoot from anywhere, you know, like, whatever. Like,
it's okay. He's Canadian.
You can shoot from the blue, like, the red line, and it'll help your Corsi. Like, that's such a common trope amongst coaches. But anyway, I got to continue here. Because our math and theirs don't add up. So what I do is I say, did the puck go in, or did they get scoring chances against? So what I find is the puck doesn't go in, and they don't give up a lot of scoring chances, and they're my best penalty killers. So that's a good game for them.
You know what's really interesting?
It's so hard to read coach speak out loud.
Yeah. You know what's really interesting about that whole thing? No one asked him about Corsi. Like, he just because, volunteered
because,
that.
Well, no, but it's good that he's thinking that way. Because, like, but what's funny, though, what cracks me up is he brought up scoring chances, and they get outchanced when that pairing is out there. Yeah. Again, like, I think the Leafs definitely probably have their own numbers that they're looking at, or like their own way of looking at it. It's just, like, I think what I take away from that quote is more of a deflection. He's probably just he's sticking up for his guys.
Yeah,
like, it's pretty simple, you know. I don't think he believes half of that stuff he said, or I don't even think he thinks much of anything of what he said. He's just like, in this situation, my guys are being challenged. I'm going to stick up for them.
Yeah.
I think that's all that is.
Yeah.
You know, of course, hockey Twitter lit on fire after that quote. But it's like, you know, take a step back. Like, what is actually happening here? And that's all it is.
Yeah.
So, man, there's been a lot lately.
Yeah,
it's been pretty crazy.
Yeah, man. All that to say that Florida, weird things happening.
Florida's a microcosm of kind of everything.
That they are.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that
like it's a convergence.
It's kind of funny that it's coming to a head now, and like we're gonna see.
It's just yet another example of weird shit happening in Florida. It's
why does Florida determine what we do everywhere else in this country?
Florida man, he's made his way to the BB&T Center.
I don't know what's happening.
Battleground state.
But yes, it is a battleground state. I mean, Florida's weird. People are really rich there. They retire. But then you have like, I mean, I don't want to disparage any Florida listeners, but you have like Miami, Tampa, like Fort Lauderdale, and then you have like, you know, like Jacksonville. I mean, even Jacksonville is kind of nice. It's by a beach, but like you have some pretty deep south towns in Florida.
Jacksonville is slightly less nice than it normally would be because Blake Bortles is the quarterback in that town.
You had that guy on your team.
That was a mistake.
Shameful.
We can all admit mistakes when they're made. And that was a mistake.
I might win the championship in one of my leagues, by the way.
Really?
I just won the first round.
There's a chance that Nick and I might play each other in the championship.
That'd be funny.
A chance.
So, yeah. All that to say, guys, it's been a good podcast. Just so the listeners know, like, we actually didn't really have a great handle on what we were going to talk about today. And then we just kind of got into the studio and just started talking. And this happened.
Yeah.
So, sometimes we accentuated our creativity and didn't, you know, conform.
Yes.
But next episode should be a bit more structured. Again, I don't want to spoil it too much, but it should be pretty good.
It'll be a good one.
Yeah. But yeah, big weekend coming up here. Ugly sweater party.
Ugly sweater party.
I have a company party, so.
But then you'll come to the ugly sweater party.
It's a good time of year.
We'll have a good time.
It's a really good time of year.
It's a great time.
But anyway, we should probably get out of here. It's cold.
Yes, it is cold.
It's actually, this is our first rainy day podcast.
Yeah, you'll probably be able to hear it.
It was like raining hard when we started.
Yeah, it was a mix of raining harder than it's ever rained in the history of California. And then every plane flew right overhead.
Yeah, so there's going to be weird noises, but just tune it out. Focus on our voices.
Yeah.
I feel like one of those like meditation
ASMR.
Yeah, the ASMR hockey podcast.
Yeah.
No.
All right. Let's get out of here.
Guys, thank you for listening. Guys. No. If I haven't lost you at this point, thank you for listening to another
If you're still listening.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Garage Hockey Podcast. If you want to hear more, we are on Stitcher and iTunes. You can listen there. If you want to tweet your questions or comments or topics at us, tweet us at Garage Hockey Pod on Twitter. Also, we appreciate a 5-star rating and review on iTunes because it will help people notice the show. Guys, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you soon.